Everyone, welcome to another edition of Zero Hour. This is going to be a two-part show tonight. We're actually going to talk about, for starters, AsahiCon. And with me in the show, we have Claudine Rossell Puente. Say hi, Claudine.
Hi, everybody. This is Claudine Rossell Puente. Some of you know me as Lady Saiyan. Hello.
Mm-hmm. And then later on the show, we'll have Bart of Team Asahi to talk about Star Wars Celebration. You probably might remember Bart. He's guest starred on our shows. He's recently been in our Anime Boston podcast. He's been with our Katsucon podcast and more. So yeah, regular on our show. So if you want to hear about Star Wars Celebration, that's going to be later on the show. But right now, we're going to talk about AsahiCon. So AsahiCon is a small anime con in the Bay Area, if you're familiar with the San Francisco Bay Area. It's located in the East Bay. The idea behind AsahiCon is to train young anime fans, high school age anime fans, to learn the ins and outs of running an anime con. So they have a one-day kind of festival at a local high school. It's moderated by veterans of Fanime Con staff. So they're pretty much mentored by people who know what they're doing. So with me on the show, Claudine, so there was an incident that happened at AsahiCon. Can you tell us more about that?
Okay. Before I get into that, the one thing I'd like to address is that AsahiCon, yes, there were some people who were affiliated with Fanime that had helped out with the con, but there were also people who were affiliated with a long-time convention. Well, it was a mini-con, but it was a fundraiser, just as this one is, and it was known as RecaCon, and it goes back to Los Medanos College, and a lot of the staffers who were working that convention, they were club members of that club, and then some of them, they affiliated, or one person had actually ended up being affiliated with Annie Akai. I'm not sure if he's a teacher. I think he's a teacher, not sure, but he is a part of that convention, and he has spoken to a lot of the high school students about promoting anime or to be, you know, to get a fundraiser, to get their feet wet, and what it's like. And, okay, so getting back to the talk that you asked, that you were talking about, there was an incident that did occur, and it was, it happened in the middle of the day. I want to say it was around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, almost 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There was an incident that happened about a block away from the convention. It was a violent one. It was about a young 16-year-old girl who was stabbed multiple times at the local middle school and taken to the hospital. Fortunately, she was not hurt. Fortunately, she wasn't, you know, it wasn't a life-threatening injury, so that was a good thing. She wasn't really, really seriously hurt, I mean to say. But the fact is that because of that incident, we were on a 20-minute lockdown. We were all ordered to go back into the building. They closed all the doors. They made sure nobody was out in the outside areas because they wanted to make sure that there was nobody running around. And with a big crowd, you know, there's always going to be somebody who's going to try and cause harm if you've got that many people, or even try to blend in so that they do not get caught, whichever would be the case. But after the all clear, we were good. We went back to normal, and we just went back and ran normal activities.
And then, yeah, that does sound like a pretty heavy incident there. It just seems like, yeah, you're at a con, you're there to have fun, and all of a sudden a lockdown happens. And I've actually worked in public schools, specifically the LA public schools, and a lockdown is nothing to joke about. It's, you don't know what could happen, and it's usually the adult's responsibility to make sure everyone's safe, to make sure that the premises are clear before you can resume activities. And it's something that needs to be taken seriously, and because you never know what might happen. You don't know who's out there on the loose. And everyone's safety is the number one priority.
Oh, absolutely. No question. Because, well, the thing is, any time a lockdown happens or any time that there's something, some kind of emergency that occurs, you know, it is the responsibility of the staffers to, you know, take responsibility, which they did, and they did. I commend them for their efforts. I commend them for, you know, taking quick action and maintaining a cool, calm, collected persona, even though we were talking about a very violent situation, not knowing what was going to happen next. So I commend them for trying to maintain the peace because, yeah, it was a scary situation. I mean, you know, when you go to a con, like you said, you want to go there to have fun, but no one ever anticipated that type of incident occurring. And, you know, it's not something to joke about. It's something that, you know, we're very fortunate. We are very fortunate that they did not enter the convention to cause harm to us, because it could have been us. It could have been us. No, it happened outside, but it could have been us. It could have been. And, but I think I think my lucky stars that nobody in our convention or at the event was harmed in any form or fashion. I mean, we might have been shooken up a little bit because it was a scary thought. You know, emotionally it is scary, so we were a bit shooken up. But you know, once we resumed, you know, everything just went back to normal. We were just enjoying what we could of the festivities.
And you had mentioned earlier that you were helping out in the artist alley, correct?
That's correct, yes. I was helping out a friend of mine who is promoting her manga. She has two manga. She has one titled Royal Icing, and that is a one-time manga. It's just one volume, and it basically is more like an Alice in Wonderland story. The only difference is it has nothing to do with a white rabbit. It has to do with pastries and all types of desserts or what have you. And then the other one is a new shoujo manga that she's working on, and it's a three volume manga that she has. Right now she has one volume out, and it's called Celestial Blue. She's currently working on volume two, but this one's a little bit different because it does not involve any cute little magical creatures like a lot of series like Sailor Moon or Cardcaptor Sakura or Wedding Beach or Madoka Magica or anything like that. And so it's a little different, and also there's a little bit of Yuri, and I don't want to spoil the rest of it, but you know, you just have to check it out yourself. So if anybody's into a little bit of Yuri, then they can take a look at that. But
I'm always up for Yuri.
I'm here to help them with her book.
And you mentioned that following the incident, there are actions that were done by certain people in the artist alley that shocked you.
Yes, there were violence, or whether it's, you know, some kind of kerfuffle that happened within your event, or if it's a falling out with a friend or anything like that. You know, there's nothing wrong with trying to make light of it. However, you know, when it comes to something that was attempted murder, you know, you really have to be careful about things like that. And one of the things that they did was they nicknamed the convention as Lockdown Con. And I mean, I wasn't too crazy about the name, but I mean, they can call it what they like. But what bothered me about it was that there were a couple of artists. They started drawing pictures, they were making buttons, or they were selling off images, and something along the lines of "I survived the lockdown con." And there were a couple of people that were just trying to promote it, and I stepped away from my table for a little bit, or our table, I should say, I was walking around because I wanted to check out what other people had, and I also needed to get some water. And there was this one artist who actually looked at me, and she asked, she says, "Would you like to buy an I Survived Lockdown Con button?" And then I looked at her and I said, "Actually, no, I wouldn't." And I was very direct with her, and I said, "I honestly do not think it's funny for you to make light of something like this." And I mean, she probably thought, "Okay, whatever," but it is how I felt. I mean, I didn't think there was anything politically correct about that, because you know, when somebody hears the term lockdown con, and if somebody asks, "Well, what was lockdown con? What happened?" It automatically goes back to what happened. The story comes up. It goes back to that girl being stabbed, and it's, you know, if anybody had been a victim of crime like that, whether they've been stabbed, whether they've been shot at, whether they've been raped or anything like that, and somebody was poking fun at it and trying to make a profit out of it, I'm sure that they would probably take the offense to it. Or, you know, it's just slicing the wounds open again. It's just something that, you know, it's a very personal thing. And, you know, we don't know what's going on in the mind of somebody who has been traumatized by something like that. We really don't. They could be angry. Maybe they could shrug it off. But then there are some people, it's just the image. It's repeating, you know, constantly in their head over and over and over again. Even though the whole incident is over and done with, it's all in the past. So for some people, it's not easy to erase that memory from their head, no matter how much they want to. I mean, for some people, they just can't. And, you know, we just have to be sensitive over things like that. And I don't think they were. I mean, I'm sure that they were doing it because they were trying to say, yes, it's a scary situation. It's just my way of getting over it. But that, I found that very tasteless. But that's just my opinion.
I think the profiting off it is the part that disturbs me the most. And let me ask you this. How old were the kids who were, how old were the vendors who were selling these items?
I want to say that they ranged anywhere from 18 to 22, somewhere in that range. But then I saw a couple of people who were either more or less my age, maybe a little older. But a majority of people, I would say the median was probably about 18, 22.
I see. Yeah, because I was also thinking, like, maybe it's an age thing. Maybe they don't know any better. And I'm really hoping that the main staffers of AsahiCon, the grown-ups that were overseeing this event, had a really long talk with them because, as I said before, lockdowns aren't a laughing matter because, yes, I understand, like, people have their own way of dealing with the situation, but to make a buck off of it from the attendees, that's just not right. There's something that just seems so morally sketchy about that. Like, I get people making fun of LineCon. I get that. But LineCon, like, we all know that. But this was a situation where someone was actually hurt.
Exactly. And the one thing that got me more than anything was that I will not mention the guy's name. I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but there was one person who was on staff. He decided to take it upon himself and say that con will be forever remembered as Lockdown Con. And then during the discussion, there was one person who says, yeah, you know, we were selling buses and they were bringing it up. And it's like, you have to bring it up again? Come on. Oh, yeah. And the worst part was he said, you know, the way I see it is the button. You know, when I saw the button being made, it's a compliment to me because that means that our con is still going. In light of all the events, you know, in light of what happened, you know, the con is still going. Everybody, you know, was such a sport about it. And it's like, yeah, I get that, you know. But honestly, I was a good sport and we didn't even need to make buttons or images out of that. We were just moving on as though as nothing had happened. I mean, we're not ignoring what happened, but we're just trying to say, you know what, let's move on. We have our fun. We have our thing. Let's just keep it. But to bring it up and then just to say, oh, well, we're just going to make a sale out of it, you know, just a little. And they say, oh, well, you know, it was only like a dollar. And it's like, I don't care if it was 25 cents. It's like, you just don't drop it out of something like that. You just don't.
I mean,
heck, I wouldn't even take it even if it was free. But that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, also, like, how do I word this? Like, even if they were, like, using the profits to give back to, like, the victim, I would still be kind of, like, just kind of sketchy on this because, like, that's not even a way how you would give back to the victim of the crime to, like, maybe help offset for medical bills. But the way you mentioned that the staffer reacted and acknowledged, like, oh, this is a way to, oh, this is us moving forward. Like, no, that's not you guys moving forward. Let me tell you about the Boston Marathon bombing a couple years ago. I hate to bring this up, but...
Like, oh, go ahead. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's. If I feel like I'm comparing apples and Aztecs here, bringing these two incidents up. But tragic event, Boston Marathon 2 years ago. I mean, Boston still remained resilient throughout everything. Like, yes, like there was. We tried to like find ways to like just get over it, but you know, we still remain strong. We went to our vigils, we remain united and all of that, but at the same time, like, if we were, like, profiting off, I mean, not profiting, if we were, like, selling shirts shirts with the Boston Strong logo on it, that money would go back to charity, and it would, like, help the victims of that event. And, like, when I look at, when you tell me about the whole buttons and, like, I Survived Lockdown Con, and they're using it for personal profit and personal gain, not only that selfish, but it's also pretty insensitive, too, and I'd also be pissed off at this staffer's actions as well, and definitely some con that I would think twice about wanting to support in future years.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I made my point, and maybe some people, you know, on there, they think, oh, I'm making a mountain out of a molehill, and it's like, no, it's not that, it's just that, this was attempted murder. This isn't something as simple as, you know, somebody waiting in line for more than 3 hours because one convention only had 3 people on registration staff or something like that, or because there was some kind of malfunction with the computer software or the internet service just shut off. I mean, that's very, very minor, but, you know, in this case, somebody got hurt. Although, I'm sure that some people are probably listening to this cast and are thinking, how dare you compare the Boston Marathon to this, because the Boston Marathon, there were 2 people that were killed, and it's like, but regardless, violence is violence is violence. It doesn't matter how you look at it. I mean, yes, that young girl was not harmed, but, I mean, I wouldn't say that she wasn't harmed, but that young woman was not killed, and she wasn't, critically injured, but still, I mean, it was still attempted murder. And then the other one, that was murder, because there were 2 people, and, that guy, he's currently being sentenced. You don't know if he's going to get life or he's going to get death, but, it's just something that you just don't, take lightly. I mean, if it were me, I probably would have said, well, thank goodness we weren't hurt. Let's just move on. If they really want to express their anger, maybe they can just get one of their anime characters fighting off bugs or something like that. I mean, as I said before, in one of my posts, I said, okay, maybe it's a little cheesy, but at least you're not going, you're not reflecting on the victim. You're going after the people that actually caused the harm. So,
Or they also want to express their sympathies, maybe a picture of the girl, and maybe, like, just a couple of anime characters, like, yeah, we support you kind of thing, and just maybe do that as a gift kind of thing. Because the other thing I was also thinking about is that staffers should create that as a teaching moment for the students, because, again, this is a con where these kids are being trained to... Excuse me. They're being trained to run the cons, and they're being trained to be responsible. And these are potentially could be our future con organizers, and you have veteran staff training them. And I think this would have been, again, a teachable moment to them. It's like, hey, you shouldn't be profiting off someone's tragedy. I mean, that's not right. And, like, yeah.
In addition to that, I mean, it's not necessarily whether or not they will potentially be staffers of conventions. I mean, yes, that is one element, but then you can also look at it this way, for the fact that the attitudes that were reflected, or the attitudes that were brought upon there, it happened in a high school. It happened in an institution of learning. And you think that somebody who is employed as a teacher or some kind of school official would frown upon that kind of motive, or to even say, you know what, I honestly don't think this is the right message we want to bring across. I don't think this is good. But to actually support it, that's like saying, well, what happens, when they, not necessarily working at another convention, but what about any other event that has absolutely nothing to do with anime? I mean, it could be a fundraiser for cancer. It could be, it could be a marathon. It could be a triathlon. It could be a number of events out there. And you just don't want to promote something like that. You just don't. And, that's not the kind of message I think that these kids or these young adults should even, or tolerate. And it's just very, very sad. It's just very, very sad.
I agree. Do you have any other final thoughts on the incident at AsahiCon, Claudine?
Well, the final thought that I will say is this. It's one thing to try try to think positively after a bad event, but, you know, don't make light on the subject. Just don't. I mean, I would not be ready to dismiss anything that quickly if somebody was hurt or sent to the hospital. And also, you know, I would not encourage that kind of behavior. And I just hope and pray that, you know, that something like that doesn't happen again. I mean, both violence and, in addition to that, somebody brings that up, because it's just childish. It's very childish. It's very heartless. And for the victim, depending on who they are, it's also very, very disheartening, because it's just slicing the wounds open again. We don't need them to relive the incident. They've seen it. They've been through it once. They don't need to go through it again. That's it. They're done.
Thank you so much for your time, for joining us on Zero Hour, Claudine. Thank you for bringing up the topic. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't have heard of it. But these are some wise words to take back with you. Again, it's horrible to profit off a tragedy. And again, stay safe and take care of yourself. We'll be back on Zero Hour with our next segment. We will be talking about Star Wars Celebration with, again, Bart of Team Misaki. And stay tuned.
Hey everyone, this is Jared sneaking into the Zero Hour to talk about one of my favorite franchises, the Star Wars. With us is, of course, the boss lady Scarlet, and of course, Mr. Bart from
Howdy.
Misaki Productions.
Howdy.
It's Team Misaki.
Damn it. And I failed, folks, immediately.
Well, who's your Tenchi girl?
Mine's usually Kyone.
One of my favorite Tenchi official artwork is like the Tenchi Muyo cast, and they're like reenacting the Return of the Jedi poster.
Yes.
That was one of my all-time favorites.
One of my favorite fan arts is the Tenchi cast, and they all have the various element rings of the Green Lantern verse. And I thought that was actually kind of a cool way they did it.
Like, one of the things, like, about Tenchi Muyo that got me into it, it's like, okay, cool, they're using lightsabers, just like Star Wars.
Exactly. They even have the sound effects, too.
But we're not here to talk about Tenchi Muyo. That's another show, sadly. But we're here to talk about Star Wars Celebration. And our friend Bart of Team Misaki is here to chit-chat about it. So, Bart, what drew you into Star Wars Celebration? And for its first time ever in Southern California.
Well, I grew up as a Star Wars fan when I was very young, courtesy of my uncle. So when I heard, got the news from a friend of mine who's part of the 501st Legion, which is an Imperial-based cosplay group that does a lot of charity events throughout
Team
the world.
Empire.
And he told me that, you know, Star Wars was going to be hitting up Anaheim this year. And this was 2 years ago, mind you. And myself and a group of fellow Star Wars fans says, we're going to go. And there's no way we're going to miss this opportunity, because after the recent changes with Lucasfilm being handed over to Disney, it seemed very appropriate that this celebration here in their U.S. show would be happen to be, you know, in Anaheim of all places.
Yeah, and D23 usually hosts their annual, well, technically every 2 years events of D23, which is like their big Disney media con, and they hosted the Anaheim Convention Center, and they always put on a good show. And Jared and I, we were watching the live stream on YouTube. It was very nice of them to like have like the main stage arena panels that were live streamed, but you also were able to check out a few of the panels out there.
Definitely. The only other main stage panel was the costume panel, which was a very interesting panel to learn about the costumes of the original trilogy, where they were talking about the artists who drew the costumes and the various people who helped make the Star Wars trilogy costumes, from various designs into how they made them, what went through the process, the art design, and the little tricks that they use, like, to make people, like, think, oh, in case you didn't know this, this actually might shock you to both, because I learned this during the panel. In Return of the Jedi, do you guys remember the scene where one after the meeting on the Rebel cruiser, they panned down to the hangar with the Millennium Falcon and all the other fighters in the hangar? So when the camera's panning down, this was in a panel, the host of the panel said, in case you didn't notice, all the people who were on that stage in that scene were kids, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
And the reason for that is it's called forced perspective. So yeah. it makes you look, when you look at a scene, you know, you're forced to think, oh, this is a really big hangar. And, you know, when you're looking down, you see, you know, people are a lot smaller when you're from a perspective. Hence the term forced perspective. Basically, they took kids that, you know, that were, happened to be, you know, engineers, kids, you know, produce. Because when you look down from above, people are generally smaller. Well, and in this case, they forced them to make it look like it's a bunch of adults running down in the hangar.
And it's also a special effects trick to make it that they can produce smaller props as well. So you don't have to have a full-scale Millennium Falcon or a full-scale X-Wing. You can have smaller-scale versions that look size-appropriate for the children, but based on the right perspective, it doesn't matter because you, as the viewer, won't know the difference.
Right.
Yeah, can you tell us more about the costume panel? That sounds actually pretty interesting because I've always wanted to get into Star Wars costuming myself, and I've always been inspired by what the 501st does and what Rebel Legion does. Were there any other interesting facts that you learned at the costuming panel?
There's definitely a lot of, like, information about what fabric was used. So if you're interested in learning the fabrics, our video that we recorded from that panel will include all that information as well. There was also a booklet that they mentioned, which is The Costumes of Star Wars. I don't remember the official title, but...
Is it Dressing a Universe?
I think it is.
Because I know I've seen that book around, and that's usually the recommended costumer's companion to Star Wars universe.
Yes, I believe that might be the book, but I would have to double check our video coverage, but it's definitely in there in our coverage. So once we get all of the videos posted, you can check our YouTube page and you'll definitely see all the panels, and especially this one, and you'll definitely learn a lot about, you know, the costumes and the designs and everything that, you know, made Star Wars what it is at that time.
What other panels did you check out? Were you there when they released the new trailers for the new Star Wars movies?
Plural? Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. How did the audience react? And I want to know what your reaction was.
So, myself and my roommates, we got there Wednesday night. We got there at approximately around 1 to 2 o'clock. So, the website said that they were going to start a overnight line, so they basically had us in Hall E of the Anaheim Convention Center. People brought their sleeping bags and, you know, were resting up and everything in between. So that was going to be what we were potentially going to do, but, well, as mentioned, we arrived around 1 and 2 in the morning. We got a good spot, though. We were able to get inside the arena zone, which what they were doing is they were passing out wristbands for certain parts of what stage we got on. So you were either in the arena or you were in a simulcast, you were in, you know, another simulcast room, you know, depending on how early you got there. So for us, we were fortunate enough to be in the arena. Definitely, the lines were very well handled. Like, the way they did up the queues was very, you know, it was easy to navigate. You didn't get lost very easily. As soon as we got into the arena, you know, we were able to find seats, you know, to wherever we wanted to sit. The one thing I liked during the opening ceremonies was they did pre-shows. So this was a common trend for the main stage, which is known as the celebration stage. Before each event, they have a pre-show. So basically they have, like, I guess what you can call, like, the pre-show hosts, you know, doing stuff for the fans, keeping them entertained before the show started. You know, that was very fun to watch. During our opening ceremonies, everyone was pretty much anticipating there was going to be a trailer of some sort. And throughout the time, we saw J.J. Abrams, and I forgot her name, but she's now in charge of Lucasfilms. I know her last name is Kennedy.
Kennedy.
Thank you. So she came on stage too. You know, she was explaining with JJ about, you know, what was going on with Lucasfilms and a little bit about Disney and the projects that they're going to be doing in the future. You know, they brought out the entire cast. not the entire cast, the main cast members for the new film, along with bringing some of the cast members from the original films, which was great to see. And then that's when JJ said, hey, so we do have something for you guys. And then the crowd just roared in excitement because they knew what it was. And they pretty much said, we have a new teaser for you guys, so go ahead and look at the screen. And as soon as, you know, even like as soon as the Lucasfilm logo popped out, everyone just screamed in excitement. I too myself was screaming in excitement. I was ready. We were excited. And then watching throughout the trailer was just phenomenal. It was amazing. You couldn't get any better than that. It was just an amazing trailer. You know, yes, it is a teaser, but it was a good teaser. It really, like, got the crowd excited. It got them even more ready for, you know, the real trailer, which we don't know when that's coming out. And at the end, all of us were just, when we heard Harrison Ford's voice say, Chewie, we're home, everyone just roared the arena. It was louder than a Sharks game, louder than a football game, baseball. It didn't matter, you know, what event you went to in your lifetime. This event just blew the roof off completely with excitement. And, you know, the memes started coming out, and then everything in between. It was just an exciting place to be. And then, you know, after the trailer, JJ and Miss Kennedy came out, and they're like, you guys like it? And everyone was just screaming and cheering. Of course we did. And then they asked, do you all watch it again? Everyone just, at that moment, just said, yes, yes, and yes, and screaming and cheering. And then he goes, all right, let's play it again. They played it again, and everyone was just excited again. It was just amazing.
It's interesting, because at the Rebels panel, and I don't know if you got the chance to hit that one, when they did their season 2 trailer, they ended up doing the same thing where the crowd was going so crazy. They're like, do you want to see it again? And the crowd just like exploded. And they're like, alrighty. And like, it was good because on the stream, the first time, they had some camera issues. So I missed a chunk of the trailer. And I was like, oh, all I heard was sound effects. And then right. I got to actually see the whole trailer. And I'm like, oh man, season 2 can't come fast enough. Oh my gosh, super excited.
Definitely. I unfortunately didn't get to go to the Rebels panel because this was definitely my first time, so I definitely wanted to get a glimpse of the convention itself. So I did walk around the exhibit floors, check out the art show that they have in the exhibit hall. They also had a display of costumes from The Force Awakens, so you got actually to see the chance to see the Stormtrooper costumes and some of the new character designs that were just on display. It was amazing. It was just exciting. It was just, you know, breathtaking. I mean, words can't describe how amazing this convention was for the entire 4 days that I attended. It was just amazing.
Can you tell me more about what you saw in the art show? Because one of my favorite things about sci-fi cons that tend to trump anime cons is looking at the art show, wherein it's kind of like a museum of fan art, where you can like look at different pieces of art, whether it's print or like three-dimensional. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So when I was walking through the art show, I was definitely like surprised by how amazing the art pieces were from these fan artists who created just beautiful pictures. And, you know, they were really like something that you can tell that it either took days, maybe a week, weeks even, to make something look as beautiful as what they brought. So, you know, each artist was very unique in their style, the colors, the composition, you know, the work was just amazing. And I myself was just tempted to buy like so many art pieces, but well, like I said, you know, this convention, you know, it was definitely, you know, just breathtaking that I was just taken away by so many things. And it's just like, you know, you want to buy this, but then you want to buy this, and you want to buy this, and you want to buy that. It's just, you don't know where to start. So, because, you know, there's just so much, you know, going on, and you feel so overwhelmed by like everything that you see at this convention. And the art show alone was just, wow, all these great art pieces were just really beautiful. And if they ever had a book for fan arts like they do with Pixiv, Star Wars should definitely get a fan art book and show these pieces, because these pieces were just beautiful, and you could definitely see, you know, what the artist was trying to go for, and what they're trying to, you know, send out, what message they're trying to send in these pieces. They were beautiful, just hands down.
And you mentioned that you went through the exhibit hall. Can you tell us a little bit more about the exhibit hall? Because when we were watching the live stream, it looked they had like little set pieces where attendees can interact. Like they had like the cantina, and they had a giant elephant walker thing. AT-ATs.
The AT-AT?
Yeah.
Okay, so when I was walking around through the exhibit hall, and I was looking at the sets that they brought in, and the Rancor that they had, and the speeder bike from Return of the Jedi that they had, I learned that all of these were fan-made. These are not actual Lucasfilm property, not Disney. This is all fan-made.
Like, I fans want made this a stuff. Fan-made speeder bike.
Yes.
Or a fan-made swoop. Definitely. If we're going to drive around the planet, let's drive around in style.
Yes.
And then crash into a tree.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, until that point, it's going to be awesome.
Right.
I actually did see, like, someone actually did make a speeder bike for Star Wars Celebration. I was looking through photos, like, oh, my God, someone made a real-life speeder bike.
Yes.
But no one has.
I definitely saw that. So there's pictures of that. Someone actually made a Rancor, too, and from Return of the Jedi.
That's awesome. Because, like, I go, because Jared and I, we do, like, the Comic Cons out here. And it's no surprise that, like, we see a lot of fan made replica pieces. Like, when we were at Rhode Island Comic Con last year, they had the dispository. It's that trash bin thing where they dump all the waste. And it's from A New Hope.
The trash compactor area thing.
Yeah, they had the trash compactor.
I thought there was a proper term for it.
I'm like, is there a proper name for it? So they had the trash compactor, and you could get a photo with a Jawa by it.
Oh,
odd choice to have a Jawa in the Death Star. And then I think you were at Boston Comic Con last year when they had, I think they had like the giant Jabba the Hutt at Boston Comic Con, and I think that was made by Rebel Legion out here because we're the Alderaan base.
Yes, they brought that to Celebration too, so you could definitely take your photographs with them during Celebration, which I remember I saw and I was like, oh, this was from Boston. That's cool that they brought it here too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no surprise because it's local in a certain sense to the States, so it's no surprise that they brought it along too.
Yeah, it's just amazing, like, just how much work and how much time people will put into their fandom and bring it to, like, an event like this for Tall Sherry, because I was looking at the Cantina set on the live stream, and I'm like, whoa, these guys have, like, a lot of time on their hands and a lot of creativity to boot, and it must be such an honor to have those pieces there, because people who were involved with, like, Star Wars, they were, like, doing interviews there, like, Billy D. Williams, he was being interviewed by the Star Wars media team during the live streams. Like, it must be so awesome to, like, just have, like, the actual stars just be a part of it and interact with it.
Definitely. The stars themselves, you know, the main cast were just, they were so chill. They were so nice, and they were so, you know, very laid back, you know. They all pretty much, you know, accepted the fact that they were a part of history in the making, and they definitely care about their fans. It shows, like, they really do care about the fans, and, you know, even Anthony Daniels, like, you can tell he's trying to act like C-3PO in front of all of us, and it's just adorable how he does it. Then, like, you know, we know that he really does like the fans, he cares about us, and he gives that little British humor that goes with it. And, you know, along with, you know, the C-3PO act, he goes, I can't believe you people would like this kind of stuff. Oh, goodness. And it's just hilarious because he's so, you know, you can tell, yeah, he definitely has that C-3PO, you know, personality to him, and he definitely fit that role all so well.
Mm-hmm. Since you mentioned also the exhibit floor, were they also, like, you know, like how cons have a dealer's hall, were there any vendors selling stuff?
Definitely. A lot of vendors were obviously selling, you know, Star Wars stuff. You know, you'll get a couple here that are selling, like, other stuff, like non-Star Wars related items, but that's just typical, though.
I heard there was a guy selling Trek stuff, like, he's beaten to death.
Yeah, some companies did, like, specialties for the weekend.
Ooh, tell us more.
So, Hallmark had a stand, and they had, like, special, like, Star Wars Hallmark cards that you can, you know, buy for the day and then just send them to, you know, people you know, your loved ones and whatnot. That was cool to see.
Early Father's Day card with Darth Vader.
pretty much. And Lego was on site too. They had like a little play area where, you know, the kids could like build Lego sets of like Star Wars stuff related stuff and everything in between. And
now I know what I'd be doing at Celebration.
You'd just be stuck in the Lego area.
Just be stuck in the Lego area.
Right. That's why we couldn't get approved for press.
But another cool part was there was an area where they had an R2 unit competition where a section of the exhibit hall was basically a competitive, you know, R2-D2 you know, race, which was really cool because it was like, it would be like something that you'd see from a high school robotics team, only in this case, you know, it's with R2 units. So basically, like, you know, people would bring their homemade R2 units, put them in a competition race, and, you know, see if how fast they can get around an obstacle course. You know, it's a combination of how fast your R2 unit is and how fast your reaction time is to, you know, go around turns and such. And that was really cool to see because, you know, to see something like that, it basically opens up to those people who, like, who want to, like, you know, maybe there's people who like R2, D2 related stuff. There was a section dedicated to building R2 units. You know, what does it take to build one? Learn about how to maybe create your own design, the basic robotic features that comes with making one. There was definitely something for everyone at this convention. And, you know, the exhibit hall basically had all those places where you could learn about those type of things and costumes and buying your stuff, of course, and then be a part of these sets. It was just wonderful. You know, there was a lot to do at this convention, and it definitely catered to, you know, all the people who had like different like takes on what they see in Star Wars and what they want to do within the Star Wars community. And, you know, this kind of stuff is definitely something that they cater to the fans for.
Now let's talk about the costuming side of Celebration. One of the things I really like about Celebration is seeing like all my friends' photos is like you can get like hundreds of stormtroopers all in one place. And I think that's totally awesome. And you get like the whole like empire right there just taking one huge group family photo.
Definitely. In this case, you know, it was primarily the 501st and other people who were just visiting. You know, they were learning about how to become members of the 501st, Rebel Legion, and any other charity-based groups. The Mandalorian mercs were on site, too. So there was definitely a lot to really just, you know, cater to the fans and just, you know, getting a chance to mingle amongst all the people that you've met throughout the weekend. And, you know, the costumes were just, they were really well done. They were creative. You know, there was a lot of people who did, like, various unique, in their own interpretation of, you know, generic costumes, like, you know, the stormtroopers. Like, one day during the weekend, I saw, like, a stormtrooper that was really, like, beaten up because, you know, stormtroopers get beaten up a lot in Star Wars. And he had, his face was, like, cut off, and you could see the blood all over his armor. There was another stormtrooper where he was basically a zombie trooper because he's been through so much and he comes back from the dead and he's a zombie. That was pretty cool.
Well, technically there is a book about that too. I mean, I don't think it's canon anymore, which is unfortunate, but look it up, folks. Death Troopers. It is Stormtroopers versus Zombies. Not making this up. Real book. Author is great. And if you like your Jedi versus Zombies, go for Red Harvest. Same general plot, except for Jedi's both Jedi and mostly Sith versus zombies, but a couple Jedis are there too. So, yeah, both awesome books, folks.
What were some of your favorite costumes you've seen on site?
Oh, that's a really tough question. That's a really good question.
Or anything that just stood out?
I can't really pick anything that stood out because the way, like, I saw this convention, in all honesty, like, everyone just has wonderful costumes. Like, you know, you could see how hard they've worked on these costumes and how much time they really put into these costumes, especially those, like, who make their own little unique designs that come with them. It's just, you know, you can see it. You know, they really are passionate about these costumes, and they're really passionate about, you know, the series, and they're just so passionate that, you know, they're going it all out. Like, they know this is the biggest show in the world. You know, they want to bring the best they can, and it shows. I mean, I don't think there was any no less than, oh my goodness, I can't even finish the sentence, because, well, how do you really answer that question? Because, you know, like I said, they were all amazing. They were all great costumes. Everyone stood out, you know, fairly equal. And the creativity was just, it was just endless. It was beautiful. I mean, you couldn't, you were really just looking at them saying, that's a really great costume. And then, you know, what idea like that, you know, or how did you do, make this, you know, how did you make this armor?
Yeah.
Definitely, it was a great conversation.
Yeah, again, I was looking through your photos earlier. It's like, yeah, it just, everyone looks like they did an amazing job. And, like, it's definitely a fandom I want to cosplay from. I've been into Star Wars for God knows how long, since my dad got the original trilogy on Laserdisc, THX widescreen edition, yo. And then, like, oh my God, I always wanted to do Star Wars costuming, but it's, I've just been, like, holding off for, like, the longest time. Jared, if you were to do costuming from Star Wars, what would you do?
Well, I've always wanted to have an Imperial officer's uniform. I just like the design of it all. Heck, if my hair was the right color, I'd do either the young Thrawn, or not young Thrawn, young Tarkin from Clone Wars, because he does exist in that series, folks. Or possibly one of the captain of the Executor in Return of the Jedi, the one that Vader doesn't kill. Other than that...
The Rebel Scum Guy?
Rebel Scum Guy. Yes, Tarkin would be the Rebel Scum Guy. Other than that, you know, I'm looking forward to finding some new characters. Because to me, I've never really... I mean, I love Han Solo, but everyone loves Han Solo, so whatever. But I haven't found any characters so I'd be like, oh, I need to dress like that character. I digs me some Tarkin, especially because we're getting a lot more Tarkin backstory in the expanded universe, and I'm digging that. But I'm kind of hoping to see some new characters coming up that might be more up my alley for characters I'd want to go as. However, I wouldn't mind a custom, like, Mandalorian type thing. I was even thinking of a way of doing, like, a visor type thing that would accommodate my glasses. So it's just little things like that I've been thinking, that I've always thought about. Because I talked with I know some of the guys from Mandalorian Mercs, and they're like, well, you don't have to wear the helmet, but you have to have the design of the armor, and we have certain little Mandalorian crests and what have you, and I'm like, that I can do. I need to figure out what to do about glasses, because you can't be a badass mercenary shooting everything if you're wearing glasses. So I had this idea for this cool little visor thing based on the designs from the Old Republic games.
Bart, were there any other things that you checked out at Star Wars Celebration that we haven't covered? Did you meet or run into any celebrities?
I've definitely had a chance to, as mentioned, you know, go to the main panels to see the celebrity panels that they were hosting. For me personally, I did get a chance to see Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, Ian McDermott, and Billy Dee Williams in their autograph sessions. The reason for that is I was able to get their autographs on the VHS tapes that I have, and I gave them to my uncle because, you know, he was the one that got me really into Star Wars, so it was the least I can do for him to really just thank him for getting me into this series, because, you know, I grew up on, really loved it, and I told these guys that, you know, hey, because my uncle, you know, I really love your guys' roles and the movies that you helped make, you know, it really made me really appreciate, you know, everything that I love about Star Wars and everything else, you know, to go to these conventions, you know, I'm really glad to have met you. You know, those moments were just priceless. I mean, you can't really put a price on that. You know, I was happy to meet them. I was happy to go to their panels to learn more about them, you know, what they do, you know, after, before and after Star Wars and everything in between. It was just a wonderful experience to just hear their stories and just learn, like, you know, what it took to be, to get to where they are today. Because of Star Wars, because most of these actors, they either went on to be voice actors or they continued, you know, doing movie roles. I remember, like, I think Ian and Anthony went back to England to do Broadway, which, you know, is very common in England.
Not called Broadway.
Especially with British actors, too, because that's what they like to do out there.
It's called West End in England.
Let's see. I had to ask, since you mentioned, like, you were able to get the autographs from all these top players in the Star Wars fandom. What was the wait like in the autograph line?
It was definitely very long, but from what I felt they did a great job, you know, doing the queue lines. You know, it was a good 1 hour wait for each person on different days.
Not bad.
But, you know, all honesty, though, it was just, it didn't feel too long. You know, they did a good job with saying, oh, you're with this group number, so come back during this time to get your autographs. And
that actually works really well. I like that.
Also, I also must ask, how would you describe, like, the overall vibration of the event, the overall fan feels?
That's a very good question. In all honesty, for this convention, this definitely, like, it's a very welcoming community. It's a very welcoming convention. As I've mentioned earlier, you know, when it came down to the costumes, my buddy and I, you know, we noticed that, you know, when he carried his Mandalorian helmet, a lot of people would ask him or even say compliment, you know, how great his helmet was. And then after that, we just started talking to them. Like, it didn't matter who they were or, you know, where they came from. We just started talking. When we were waiting in line, you know, we just got ourselves involved with other conversations. You know, when people were talking about Star Wars and all that stuff, we joined in. It was very, it was definitely, you know, very welcoming. Like, the people were very mellow, really nice. You know, they were talking about, you know, how they got into Star Wars and, you know, why they love it and everything in between. You know, this definitely was a, you know, warm welcome for a lot of people who are not only first timers, but for veterans who've gone to these conventions for many years.
Yeah, from what you described there, it sounds like the old days of anime cons, or like even the smaller anime cons where you can like be in line for God knows how long, but still kind of make friends like while you're in line with people, or you just run into someone and just randomly strike a conversation, and next thing you know, like half an hour later, you're just geeking out over your fandom, and I kind of miss that kind of vibe.
Definitely, you know, that's the kind of vibe that, you know, we grew up with when it came to the anime community. And, you know, my friend and I were talking about it too, that, you know, a lot has changed in the anime community, but after coming to this con, you know, it kind of rekindled those days that we grew up on. And, you know, this is something that we really miss. And it's sad to say that, you know, the generations are getting younger and more easily influenced by, you know, the wrong ideas about anime conventions. I remember during another podcast that we talked about, you know, we noticed that, you know, alcohol and partying has started to really take a dramatic rise in the anime community. And in this case, for this convention, like, even though, like, the presence of alcohol was there, the one thing I noticed differently about this convention as opposed to anime conventions was that it was well in check. Like, people were very responsible with their drinks. You know, no one was trying to get, you know, purposely drunk. And in all, you know, people were still socializing, you know. Even though they had the presence of alcohol, they were just primarily socializing, you know. As I mentioned, you know, not too long ago, you know, everyone was starting conversations with random people. Didn't matter who you were. You know, if you had a piece of your costume or you were wearing your costume, you know, you've received compliments or people asking, you know, how did you make that or where did you get that? I mean, that's the kind of environment that really, like, shows a great convention and shows that people are having a wonderful time.
That sounds awesome. Do you have any other lasting final thoughts on Star Wars Celebration?
It's without a doubt, if you are a Star Wars fan, I would highly recommend coming to this convention. I mean, this convention was well ran. There was a lot of panels, great panels. I mean, even when I was reading the guidebook, you know, I couldn't honestly pick which panels I really wanted to go to. I mean, there was just so much you could choose from. I mean, it was really hard to just find the panel that I really wanted to go to. Thus, you know, this being my first time at Celebration, it was just hard. It was really overwhelming. It's just, where do we begin? I mean, this is kind of stuff that when you go to conventions, you want to feel like, oh man, there's so many things I want to do, but I don't know which ones I want to go to. You know, that's the kind of feeling that, you know, conventions should have. Whereas to, you know, when you go to a convention, you look at the guidebook, it's like, there's not really anything I want to do. I mean, that kind of feeling, you know, it helps. It kind of just, it encourages, like, a lackluster in conventions and programming, because most of the time it's just fan panels, which is, there's nothing wrong with that, but you kind of want to do like industry-based panels. Like when we went to a main panel in, you know, on the celebration stage, it felt like a talk show host doing his thing, and it was a talk show like panel, which that was really cool. I mean, for to do something like that for 1 hour to learn about the guests and the cast member that you really want to learn about, you'll definitely learn a lot from those panels and the style. And I liked it.
I think a convention that focuses on only one series is, it's a lot easier to do that kind of industry type stuff rather than the fan panels, because with Star Wars, you know, you're going to start getting some really weird panel offerings if you need to fill up fan panel space, or you get like the why Bothans are better than Mon Calamari panels and stuff like that. You're going to get, you know, who'd win in arm wrestling, Jabba the Hutt, or Jar Jar or something. You know, you're going to get some really weird panels. So I think it's good that it's just like, nope, just give it to the industry or the professional charity cosplay groups, stuff like that. People who know what they're talking about, and you don't have to get the really weird, unnecessary panels.
Well, I think to add on to that, I think it's not just, you know, particularly, you know, a dominant convention based on one theme. I think conventions could actually still do these kind of things, but they got to do it with their guests. I mean, the way, like, most anime conventions nowadays, it's just a big Q&A session, which, you know, that's good and all, but, you know, you kind of want to, like, really sell them. Like, talk about, you know, how did you get into this, or what really prompted you to do this? You know, tell us more about yourself. I mean, what do you do? I mean, I think the fans would be more happy to want to learn about stuff like that. I mean, I definitely was interested about, you know, not just, oh, what was it like being on Star Wars? Like, maybe I wanted to learn more about, you know, how did it really affect them as a person after the trilogy was over. That's the thing that they covered during these panels. And I think, you know, conventions should really look into doing something like this with their guests. Like, have, like, you know, like, a personality interview, personality host who basically like a talk show, you know, style, you know, treat them like this, maybe like make it like an hour and a half, you know, 1 hour to learn about the person, and a half hour could be dedicated to, you know, Q&A for the fans. You know, that's the kind of thing that would really sell them very well. And I think fans would appreciate something like that too, because, you know, it gives them an opportunity to maybe like, you know, maybe like the guest might have something they want to share with the fans, you know, because I remember during the Mark Hamill panel, he had some photographs he shared with us about with him on set, and how he said that, you know, he got a chance to meet his favorite actors that he grew up on, because, you know, he was a fan of two actors that were on the set too. And I don't really remember their names because they're so very noble, but he then got a chance to meet the actor who played Grand Moff Tarkin, which he really looked up to.
Peter Cushing.
Yes. He mentioned during his panel, I was like, oh, I really wanted to meet him. You know, as soon as, you know, he said, if he's on set right now, I will go to that set and meet him. And he had a chance to meet him, and he showed a photograph where it's him and Peter just looking at each other. You know, he's smiling. They're both smiling at each other. You know, he was really happy to have met him, because he mentioned that, you know, he grew up on him and he really liked him.
He's a great actor, and he's in some of my favorite movies, the Hammer Dracula movies, as Van Helsing. And he also ironically played Dr. Frankenstein in the Hammer Frankenstein movies, but I've never actually seen any of those.
Definitely. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, because these actors are people too, you know, the opportunity to meet a celebrity that you grew up on, you know, it means a lot to them as well.
Awesome. Any other final thoughts on Star Wars Celebration before we wrap up?
As I've mentioned before, you know, if you are a Star Wars fan, I would highly encourage you to go to this convention, no matter where you are, you know, in the U.S. or even in the world, because there's a lot of people who travel to this convention, and they're coming from around the world. My buddy and I, we met some people who were from Germany, Italy, France. We even met people who were from England. There was just so many people from everywhere around the world that came to this convention, and the power of this convention, you know, it really does show. I mean, the fact that you know, I don't know what the final numbers were for this convention, but if I had to put a venture guess, I would say there was probably maybe somewhere between 40 to 50,000 people throughout the weekend that came to the show. I can believe it.
Yeah, I can too. And because it's not an every year convention, I think it really helps draw people in because they have time to make the plans. They have time to get the money together. So yeah, you can go from out of country even, which I am a bit surprised about, but not, you know, not even hugely surprised, because it really does seem like for Star Wars, you know, it's not just Americans who love Star Wars. It's the world that loves Star Wars. I mean, it's hit a chord of so many people because, you know, it is a fairly archetypal story, but there's characters you can relate to. There's moments, there's, you know, triumphs, and there's tragedies. And I think everyone can kind of see a little part of themselves in that universe, which is probably why you can have people coming from all ends of the earth to go see these things. Plus, whenever you're going to have the chance to, you know, see, you know, Mark Hamill or Carrie Fisher, you know, they don't go out to a lot of events. They're very selective. And, you know, Anthony Daniels, probably even more so. I've never seen his name listed on anything. I've at least seen Billy Dee show up at a lot of different places. But I've never, you know, there's certain people you just never really see out and about at different cons. You know, they're not whoring themselves out like that. And, you know, to go to an event like this where they'll get the respect and treatment they deserve is really kind of cool. And this is, you know, your one chance.
Definitely, because I remember, you know, when I first came to this convention, you know, my friend was saying that, you know, we're going to really enjoy this convention. And no doubt about it, I really did. It was a fun convention, well ran, great panels, great guest lists. And, you know, like he was saying, you know, this convention comes every 2 years, you know, to each continent, which their next one next year is going to be in Europe. So basically, like, it switches every other year where 1 year it'll be in Europe and then the next year it'll be in the U.S., et cetera, et cetera. We're definitely hoping that they'll be back here in Anaheim because, you know, I really enjoyed the convention center. The last time I was there was for Anime Expo 2006, which back then, you know, it was a lot different compared to that as it is right now, where the area itself really expanded. And right now, currently, there's construction being done at the convention center. They are expanding it.
Ooh,
again.
Excuse me. So what I'm noticing, you know, I read an article online was that the Anaheim Convention Center is the largest convention center in California right now. And the fact that they're expanding means they're going to get bigger and bigger. And that's going to basically give them more breathing room to host this convention. Maybe they'll add something in the expanded area, or maybe that'll be the queue hall for going inside the arena for future references, thus giving more room to the exhibit hall too, because I don't believe I mentioned this, but the queue lines to go inside the arena was inside the exhibit hall. It was over near Hall D, and they had approximately 10 queue lines, where the way it was done was you line up in the first queue, you know, as the first one that's available, and once that line is ready to go, or once the show is about ready to be let in, they go through each line one by one and let people in, groups of people in one by one, and not zigzag them into the arena as most conventions would do. I think this was very effective because you weren't constantly, you know, having to shuffle around, you know, going back and forth. You know, this type of thing was really well done. You know, it was very fast and people didn't feel crowded. You know, it was a straightforward process. And I think a lot of conventions could utilize this to their advantage because, you know, the idea of having, you know, separate lines for each group going into one venue or one area definitely made a difference.
All right, I think that's all we have on our show to discuss Star Wars Celebration. Thank you so much for being on our show, Bart. And hopefully sometime in the near future, Scarlet Rhapsody will head over to Star Wars Celebration. We're just kind of bummed weren't able to make it this year due to timing and budget, but we're happy that one of our people actually was able to hit it up.
Definitely, and we're still working on the videos right now. It's taking a lot longer to process them because, as mentioned, you know, we did go to a lot of panels. We're very certain that We will probably have them ready, hopefully over the weekend, because it does take a while for them to encode. And, you know, especially for one video for an hour, it takes approximately 6 to 7 hours, as we do.
Yeah,
we definitely broadcast them on 1080p with 60 frames per second. So we're going to get them out as soon as humanly possible. And we're really excited to broadcast them on YouTube.
And for the meantime, we'll have your link to your YouTube page on our website on this podcast, so you guys can go check it out and subscribe to Team Misaki Studios. And anywho, this has been another edition of Zero Hour, and we shall see you at the con. And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.
We lift up our lightsabers.
We lift them up to the Force.
Thank you for having me again. Time.